Well, it's dumping snow here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. I walked to the gym and it was raining on me and cold, and it was okay. And then when I walked back home, I was getting snowed on. It wasn't terrible though. I've suffered through worse. So don't worry, everybody, the Great One is okay. Although, if you're feeling sympathetic, if you're like, oh, poor Great One, you had to walk in the snow, you could always go to cls.link/Amazon. That's cls.link/Amazon. And spend some money at my Amazon affiliate so I can buy a little Supergirl figurine that I don't need. That would make me feel better. My feels! Oh, my feels. Oh, you scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a safe space. You can shove your opinions up your ass. That way the Trump and Furious cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility. You are wrong, and I am right. Fuck you. The millions go wild. The girls throw their underwear. All the boys go to cls.link/Amazon and spend money. Yes, this is Stating the Obvious podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile, my intellect. Homes in on and destroys my fucking status all around the world. But who would build the roads? I don't know. And in Capodice, maybe we don't need roads. Maybe everybody grow their own food. And if you wanted a motherfucking iPhone, you would just print one on your 3D printer. Because Apple wouldn't be able to have all these secrets and manufacture their products in fucking factories in China where people jump off of buildings and kill themselves because the working conditions suck so much. But of course, those are yellow people, and well, we don't give a shit about yellow people. We only care about black people and brown people. We are back, too. We haven't talked about this in a while. We're going to finish, well, not finish this. We're going to move down the path towards finishing this. You can also move down the path towards sending me love mail, hate mail, naked pictures of your girlfriend, naked pictures of you if you're a cute redhead with curly hair. You can send all of that to God, dog spelled backwards, God at CYNLIBSOC.com on the interwebs. Back to talking about the book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone by Brian Merchant. If you didn't catch the first two parts in this series, first two episodes in this series, you could go back and listen to those. You don't have to. It's in Capodice. You can do whatever you want. But I'm just saying, if the book sounds interesting to you, go back and listen to those. This is, again, very good book. Highly recommend you reading it. All right, we're on page 155. And we're talking to Sophie Wilson. We're talking about Sophie Wilson, who, not by herself, but kind of almost by herself, to a large extent, she created the first, and let me pull this up, because I had to look this up to see what it said. I thought I knew what it meant, but let me check. So she invented, or mostly invented, the ARM chick. That ARM chick. God damn it. We're off to a great start here. And this is the second, I actually had started the podcast and it sucked so bad that I started over. The ARM, that's Alpha Romeo, but what the fuck is M in the fucking military? How could I forget this? Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Epsilon, Foxtrot, Gamma, M, Mike, God. The Alpha Romeo Mike computer chip. ARM stands for Acorn RISC Machine. Acorn was the name of the company she worked for. And of course you say, well, what the fuck is RISC? RISC stands for Reduced Instruction Set Computer. So it's a computer chip that needs less instructions than your standard. In other words, it's a computer chip that doesn't have bloatware built into it. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the ARM and its creation. Quote from Sophie, "We wanted to produce a processor used by everybody, and so we have." Unquote. That's not hyperboil. The ARM processor that Wilson designed has become the most popular in history. 95 billion have been sold to date. And 15 billion were shipped in 2015 alone. ARM chips are in everything. Smartphones, computers, wristwatches, cars, coffee makers, you name it. Sophie Wilson, who is transgender, was born Roger Wilson in 1957. She grew up in a DIY family of teachers. Now you say, great one, she's transgendered. Are you going to rip on her? Are you going to make fun of her? Are you going to call her a he, she, it? You know what? No, I'm not. And you know why? And this will become illustrated as we move forth and we get near the end of the section. You know why I'm not going to rip on Sophie Wilson for being transgendered? Because Sophie Wilson actually contributed something to society. Sophie Wilson didn't go, hey everybody, look at me. I have a penis, but I'm really a girl and I'm a snowflake and I need a lot of attention. And if you say anything that hurts my feelings, I'm going to tell on you and I'm going to march and wear a pussy hat and I'm going to hate white people and I'm going to try to get laws passed that force you to call me by the pronouns that I like. And if you don't, you're going to be in trouble. You know what Sophie Wilson did instead of whining like a fucking piece of shit parasite? Sophie Wilson invented a computer chip that has sold 95 fucking billion of them. I don't know. Sophie Wilson kind of fucking contributed to the fucking advancement of the human species. No, I'm not going to make fun of her. I'm not. Because she's the one transgendered person in the history of the fucking planet Earth that's actually done something. And for all you fucking transgenders out there who are fucking, this is how you do it. You want people like me to stop making fun of you? This is how you do it. Right here. Pay fucking attention. This is how it's done. It's not done with whining. It's not done with pussy hats. It's not done with hating Republicans. It's not done with casting spells on Donald Trump because you're a fucking witch. Okay, none of that shit is how you fucking do it. This is how you do it right here. Quote, we grew up in a world which our parents had made, Wilson says, meaning that literally. Quote, Dad had a workshop and lathes and drills and stuff. He built cars and boats and most of the furniture in the house. Mom did all of the soft furnishings for everything, clothing, etc. Unquote. Wilson took to tinkering. Quote, by the time I got to university and I wanted a hi-fi, I built one from scratch. If I wanted, say, a digital clock, I built one from scratch, she says. No, if she wanted a digital clock, she did not whine about the patriarchy oppressing her from making enough money to buy a digital clock and then go to the LGBTQQP plus, by the way, the plus stands for pedophile, KKK branch on campus and complain about how white men were holding her down. Okay? See, she didn't do that. If she wanted a digital clock, well, she built one. See, that's the difference between her and all the rest of you. She did things. I know you think whining is doing something. It's not. She went to Cambridge, where she failed out of the math department, which is how we know she really is a girl and not a boy. great one. You weren't going to make fun of her. No, I'm laughing with her, not at her. I really, that, you know, yeah, math sucks. Fuck that. I mean, okay, so she doesn't like math, which is hilarious because she designed a fucking microprocessor. And she went to Cambridge. I'm sorry, how many of you fucking trannies out there went to Cambridge? Even if you failed out of math when you got to Cambridge, how many of you made it to Cambridge? Exactly. Shut up. She went to Cambridge where she failed out of the math department. That turned out to be a good thing because she switched to computer science and joined the school's newly formed Microprocessor Society. There, she met Steve Ferber, another inspired gearhead. He would go on to be her engineering partner on several influential products. Okay, jumping ahead, blah, blah, blah. Now we're talking about her and... Why do I not remember the name of the guy that I just fucking... Steve! Hold on, let me mark this page, because I'm going to forget Steve's name again and have to come back and go, what was his name? Oh, yeah, Steve Ferber. So, yeah, she and Steve went forth, and they got a job at Acorn. They're working at Acorn, and they're working for a guy named Herman, and now they're talking about this. Blah, 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 requires some luck. It also required, this is the quote from Sophie, it also required Herman. Herman gave us two things that Intel and Motorola didn't give their staff. He gave us no resources and no people. So we had to build a microprocessor the simplest possible way. And that was probably the reason that we were successful. Unquote. And there's a thesis behind this. There is a thesis out there, a theory, a concept that sometimes people do better with fewer resources. And there have been various studies, we talked about studies two episodes ago, many of which, of course, probably can't be reproduced. God, I have to focus. We'll be revisiting all of this shit from two podcasts ago with studies and believability and reproducibility and everything else. But studies have shown, research has shown, it's like they say, right? Research shows, okay, they say that research shows that studies have proven, that's three layers of bullshit, in situations where people have to solve problems, in some circumstances, people will actually solve the problems faster if they have fewer resources at their disposal. Or they will come up with quote-unquote better solutions if they have fewer resources at their disposal. And that's what she's saying here, because they had no resources and they had no people to help them. It was basically the two of them trying to pull this out of their ass because they had so little to work with, right? They had to be brilliant in their concept and their execution because they had no excessive resources to waste. Is that something to think about as you're going forth in your life and you go, well, I don't have enough. Well, maybe you don't need enough. Maybe you have just what you need. And maybe if you work with what you've got, maybe you will arrive at a better place than you would otherwise. It's kind of like minimalism. They also had another thing, that thang, as my Texan kicking in the thang, they also had another thing that set them apart from the competition. Sophie Wilson's brain. The ARM instruction set, quote, was largely designed in my head. Remember, as a person who couldn't handle math, yet she designed the instruction set for the chip in her head. See, once again, trannies who fucking whine and stuff. See, this is what success looks like. She designed the instruction set for the chip in her fucking head. You know what's in your head? Hatred of white people, victim status, killing unborn babies, raising taxes. This is why you're a bunch of pussy hat wearing losers. The ARM instruction set, quote, was largely designed in my head. Every lunchtime, Steve and I would walk down to the pub with Herman. That's how you get your work done. You go to the pub, goddammit. See, once again, at lunchtime, did she go out and protest because white people? No, she went to the fucking pub, she had a beer or two, and she fucking designed the instruction set for a goddamn computer chip. Talking about where we'd gotten to, what the instruction set looked like, what decisions we'd taken, unquote. That was critical in convincing their boss they could do what Berkeley and IBM were doing and build their own CPU, Wilson says. And in convincing themselves, too. Quote, we might have been timid, but Herman became convinced that we knew what we were talking about by listening to us. Notice Herman did not become convinced because she wore a pussy hat, because she protested, because she was a member of Black Lives Matter, because she had a specific pronoun you had to use like Z or Zer or Zay or Fay or Fair. No, she convinced her boss that she was competent by being competent. I know, patriarchy, oppression, I know. See, there's no victimhood in here. In this whole section about, there's no victimhood in this, about this whole thing. You fucking trannies out there might want to read this part of the book, because you probably can't read the whole book, because the rest of it's patriarchal, because it talks about technology and men doing things like climbing up 250 feet on the air and cell phone towers and fucking dying so you can have your fucking iPhone. And I know. I walked past a construction site today in the snow. I looked. I didn't see any women. I only saw men in the snow building a building. Oh, strong, independent, equal, can do anything a man can do, fish bicycle. I did not see any women on the construction site. So anyhow, they build the first chip, right? They build their test case, they put it together, and bam, and they're testing it out. And it's working great. All right, everything's going along. Now we jump in. As the story goes forth. But Ferber soon took a break from the celebration. He knew he had to check the power consumption because that was the key to shipping it in the cheap plastic cases that would make the computer affordable. It had to be below 5 watts. He had built 2 test points on the board to test the current and found, oddly, that there was no current flowing at all. Quote, this puzzled him and everyone else, so we prodded the board and we discovered the main 5-volt supply to the processor wasn't actually connected. There was a fault on the board, so he was trying to measure the current flowing into the 5-volt supply and there wasn't any, unquote, Wilson says. The thing was, though, the processor was still running, apparently with no power at all. How? The processor was running on leakage from the circuits next to it. Quote, the low power big thing that the ARM is most valued for today, the reason it's on all your mobile phones, was a complete accident, Wilson says. Quote, it was 10 times lower than Steve had expected, and that's really the result of not having the right sort of tools, unquote. Wilson had designed a powerful, fully functional 32-bit processor that consumed about 1/10 of a watt of energy. Notice it does not say Wilson wore a pussy hat and held a sign about how much white people should die. Notice it does not say Wilson founded a branch of the GLBT plus KKK at her local community college. Notice it does not say that Wilson punched Nazis. See, Wilson designed a fully functional 32-bit processor that runs on 1/10 of a watt of energy. Fuck you. Blah, blah, blah. As CPU critic Paul DeMond noted, quote, it compared quite favorably to the much more complicated and expensive designs, such as the Motorola 68020, which represented the state of the art, unquote. The Motorola chip has 190,000 transistors. ARM has a mere 25,000 transistors. Shortly after, in an effort to continue to simplify their designs, Wilson and company built the first so-called system on a chip, or SoC. Wilson built the first system on a chip. She didn't do it wearing a pussy hat. She just built the fucking chip. Today, Wilson is the director of integrated circuits at Broadcom. When ARM was split off from Acorn, she remained a consultant. Wilson came out as transgender. Transgender. I'm so used to saying transgender. Thank you, South Park. Fuck you. I'm transgender. Transgender. Came out as transgender in 1992, and she keeps a low profile. Wait, you mean she doesn't put on a pussy hat and fucking shove her sex organs in everybody's face? Oh, wait, that's right. She's busy actually doing things. Oh, yeah, she's not a college student. Yes, she's actually contributing to society. Don't you fucking trannies try this. Don't you try doing something. Make the world a better place. Oh, you can't because you're fucking worthless. She keeps a low profile, but is nonetheless celebrated as an inspiration to women in STEM by LGBT blogs and tech magazines aware of her work. In other words, she's used as a showpiece by a bunch of fucking trannies who have never done anything of value. And once again, this is what the left does. The left is parasitical in every fucking way you can imagine. The left, oh, look, here's this transsexual person, and she did something great. Let's all go latch on to her. It's not, wow, look, this. Why don't we go do something great? No, it's, oh, I'm going to write a blog post about how awesome she is, and that's why trannies rule. And if you don't call trannies by their preferred pronoun, you're a Nazi, and I'm going to punch you with my pussy hat. Stop parasiting off of other people's accomplishments and accomplish something of your own. But you can't, can you? And that's the problem. That's the crux right there. That is the crux of the left. That is why you are parasites, because you can't accomplish anything. She was recognized as one of the 15 most important women in tech by the likes of Maximum PC. Although at this point we can just remind everybody that she's actually not a woman, she's a man. The blog Gender Science named her Queer Scientist of the Month. Even though she's not a scientist, she majored in computer technology. She went to care, she filled out a math. Majored and switched to computer science. That's not, computer science is not science. But then again, I would not expect anybody who writes a blog called Gender Science to be able to understand that. She's not a scientist. She's an engineer. She's a technician. She has created and accomplished great things. She's not a scientist. But then again, since none of you know what the fuck science even is, she cuts against the stereotype of the straight male inventor that rose to prominence in the 1980s, and it's not hard to wonder whether her genius would have been more recognized today if she had better fit the Steve Jobs mold. No, she'd have been like Steve Jobs, running around in attention-whoring and taking credit for other people's accomplishment. She would be like every other tranny on the planet Earth today, right? Trannies and same thing. Steve Jobs. This entire book is about Steve Jobs taking credit for other people's work and fucking people over and attention whoring. Okay, what does the GLBTKKK all about? Fucking people over, taking credit for other people's work, just like they're taking credit for Sophie, and attention whoring. So no, if she had been more like Steve Jobs, she probably would not have accomplished anything as great as she did accomplish. It was not being an attention whoring cunt like Steve Jobs, that led to Sophie creating this microprocessor. God damn it, you people are dumb. I think that's the end of that part. Am I done here? I am done here. Page 193. What's happening on page 193? Let's find out. Yes. Oh! We didn't talk about this yet. Wait, where the fuck is... God damn it. 156. Did I? Oh, wait. Page 146. See, now I have to remember what I talked about and not talked about. God, this is... My life is rough. Yes! Never mind. I already did that part. Bam! Moving forward. See, we're about to talk about the part I thought I had already talked about. And then I thought the part I was talking about next was the part I had already talked about. And great one. What are you talking about? Oh, I don't know. But I'm going to have another drink of tea. Page 193. In the summer of 2014, Joel Metz, a cell tower climber, and 28-year-old father of four, was working on a tower in Kentucky, 240 feet above the ground. Notice he was working. He was not going to school. He was not protesting with a pussy hat. He was not being confused about what gender he is. See, he was working. He was replacing an old boom with a new one when his colleagues heard a loud pop. A cable suddenly flew loose and severed Metz's head and right arm, leaving his body dangling hundreds of feet in the air for 6 hours. The gruesome tragedy is, sadly, not a fluke, which is why it's absolutely necessary to interrupt the regularly scheduled story of collaboration, progress, and innovation with a reminder that it all comes at a cost, that the infrastructure that makes wireless technology possible is physically built out of human labor. By human, we mean male. We're getting to the part where there's no women involved in any... There's no women on that construction site in the snow today. Wow, odd, isn't it? Built out of man, male labor, and high-risk work, and that people have died to grow and maintain that network. To many people, Metz's death was just one of scores that have befallen... What? Oh, sorry, that's a different two. I was going to... What? It's not an opinion, it's a fact. They either died or they didn't. Okay. People have died to grow and maintain that network. Too many people, as in T-O-O, not T-O. Metz's death was just one of scores that have befallen cell tower climbers in the past decade. Since 2003, Wireless Estimator, the primary industry portal for tower design, construction, and repair, has tallied 130 such accidental deaths on towers. In 2012, PBS Frontline and ProPublica partnered for an investigation into the alarming trend. It's an alarming trend. Considering it's mostly white men who are dying, I'm surprised anyone noticed. An analysis of OSHA records shows that tower climbing has a death rate that was 10 times that of the construction industries. As we go forward, think about how many women tower climbers do you think there are? Because, you know, strong, independent, anything a man can do, fish, bicycle. Hold on. Let's Google something here. Let's use Google. I Google is everything's on Google. It's true. Google. Female tower climbers. Oh my God. I don't want to know about that. If I want to say, all right. Okay, like this chick is not a legit tower climber. Sorry. If you are a girl or a woman interested in tower climbing, do not let the male-dominated environment put you off. You have every chance of being just as successful as any man. After all, not every man that you see could be a successful cell phone tower technician. No, but you have to be able to climb 250 fucking feet in the air, sweetie. Oh my God, who wrote this shit? TowerClimber.com. This is what it actually says. At the very basic level, there is absolutely nothing. What? At the very basic level, there is absolutely nothing from preventing a woman from studying electronics and excelling at it. Okay, studying electronics doesn't mean you can be a tower climber. Okay, it actually says this, guys. Having a womb doesn't mean you can't think and doesn't preclude you from understanding some of the most difficult and complex theories as well as complicated practical working environments. It's not the womb that's the problem, it's the wiring in your brain. Okay, this doesn't tell me how many there are. I want to know how many women tower climbers there are. I don't want to hear a rah-rah that you can do it. You go, girl. I want a fucking statistic on how many women actually climb 250-foot cell phone towers. This 34-year-old tower technician is one of the handful of women climbers in the U.S. So there's only a handful, is what this website is telling me. Has a picture of her. She's not attractive. I want to know, do we have any fucking... Nope. Oh, dude. The great one does not like high... Yeah, so here's a bunch of pictures that people took up on top of these towers. Yeah, this is... Yeah, see the great... Yeah, I'm not doing this. No. Uh-uh. Jeez, see? And this is why it's tough, because you got to... Woo! Because you got to be able to do this. Holy shit. I'm looking at all these pictures. I ain't seen a woman yet. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, nope, not doing that. That might be a woman. It's hard to tell. Oh, she's got tattoos! Alright, so there's one woman. Whoa, holy shit. Snakes up on the top of the cell phone tower. There's like this giant mass of snakes up on the tower. Alright, I'll post a link to these pictures. All right, there's another chick tower climber. She might be 250 feet. It's hard to tell. Oh, here's the third. Oh, here's the same one. So we got four pictures of, so far we got four female tower climbers on the planet Earth that we have evidence of. Because this chick, I don't believe she's an actual tower climber. And I say she is. Lauren James, 24-year-old. Okay. All right, maybe so. There's a few out there. Good job, girls. Once again, okay, so there's a few women out there who can climb a fucking tower. Bravo for you. That doesn't mean the other fucking 3.5 billion women on the planet Earth should be allowed to vote, okay? The fuck was I? The investigators found that climbers were often given inadequate training. Wait, hold on. The corporations they worked for did not adequately train them? Hold on. I thought the government protected us from the corporations. I thought the government, because without the government, right, the corporations would run wild and the corporations would run down the streets and rape and kill people, except there wouldn't be any streets because without no government who would build roads. I thought the government provided us with the five-layer protection, the patented five-layer protection that protects people from the corporations, right? Patented five-layer protection. It's like wearing not one, not two, not three, not four, but five condoms on your dick when you stick them into a woman who owns horses. Right? It's like five condoms. It's five-layer protection that the government provides to protect us from the corporations. Yet the corporations is sending these people up 250 feet on the air in a cell phone tower, on a cell phone tower, without adequate fucking training and faulty safety equipment? No way! Well, without the government, they do that. Wait, they are doing that, and there is a government. How's the government protecting us from corporations? Oh! Must justify statism. Ah, brain hurts. The investigators found that climbers were often given inadequate training and faulty safety equipment before being sent out to do maintenance work on infrastructures that loomed hundreds of feet above the ground. If you ever want to get a taste of how gut-churningly high these workers climb, there's always YouTube. Watch and get vertigo on the... Which I would, too. I was like, sometimes I don't get along with heights. I have been known to get vertigo occasionally, depending on the situation. I can tell you, the great one is not climbing a fucking 250-foot tower. It's not happening. All right. Now, if at the top of the tower, let's say there is $1 billion, or a redhead with curly hair wearing a Supergirl outfit, okay, then I'd consider it. It's like, well, can I see a picture of the redhead? You know, it's okay. The investigators found that one carrier was seeing more fatalities than all of its major competitors combined. Guess who? And guess when? Quote, 15 climbers died on jobs for AT&T since 2003. Over the same period, 5 climbers died on T-Mobile jobs, 2 died on Verizon jobs, and 1 died on a job for Sprint, unquote, the report noted. Quote, the death toll peaked between 2006 and 2008 as AT&T merged its network with Cingular's and scrambled to handle traffic generated by the iPhone, unquote. 11 climbers were killed during that rush. So when the iPhone came out and everybody went berserk and had to have one, and AT&T had to rapidly expand their network, 11 people died. And I guarantee you it was all men, because if any of them were women, Brian Merchant, who wrote a good book but is still a leftist, Brian Merchant would have made damn sure he told us that. Right, Brian didn't need to tell us that Sophie is transgendered. That's completely irrelevant to her accomplishments. So I promise you, if any of these dead people were female, or transgendered, or non-binary, or attack helicopters, I'm sure we'd hear about it. You might recall the complaints about AT&T's network that poured in after the iPhone debuted. It was soon overloaded, and Steve Jobs was reportedly furious. It must be rough being Steve Jobs to be furious over something like that. AT&T's first world problems, man. Jesus. AT&T's subsequent rush to build out more tower infrastructure for better coverage, ProPublica's report indicated, contributed to... write a little bit better, people. ProPublica's report indicated that AT&T's subsequent rush to build out more tower infrastructure for better coverage contributed to hazardous working conditions and the higher-than-usual death toll. See, that's how the sentence should be written. What the fuck does this guy... is this other than writing? He's an editor at Motherboard. Okay, dude, you're an editor and you don't know how to fucking write. Okay. The following years saw fewer deaths, down to a low of just 1 in 2012. Sadly, after that, there was another sharp spike, up to 14 deaths in 2013. Once again, pretty sure none of them were women, otherwise it would be pointed out. The next year, the U.S. Labor Department warned of, quote, an alarming increase in worker deaths, unquote. Oh, good job, government. Hey, the government noticed. Oh, bravo. Oh, man, without the government, who would notice people dying at work? And when they noticed, what did they do? Because, you know, what aspect of the patented five-layer protection did the government implement? Well, they warned. They put out a warning that people were dying on towers. Oh, thank you, government. What would we do without you? How could we survive? The major carriers typically offload tower construction and maintenance to third-party subcontractors who often have less than stellar safety records. Quote, tower workers' deaths cannot be the price we pay for increased wireless communication, unquote, OSHA's David Michael said in a statement. But it is. Oh, it is. They build more towers. The towers need more maintenance. It has to be done. People have to climb up there to do it, and they die in the process. That is exactly the price you're paying to be able to fucking post on Instagram. Tower climbing is known as a high-risk, high-reward job. Ex-climbers have described it as a Wild West environment, and a fraction of those who've died in accidents have tested positive for alcohol and drugs. How do you get a guy to pee in a bottle after he's dead? Great when he doesn't have to. You test. I know that. It was a joke. God damn it. To explain everything to you people. It's like you're millennials or something. I have to explain everything. Okay, an op-ed piece is not a fucking study. It's an op-ed piece. They're two different things. Still, the subcontractors are rarely significantly penalized when deaths do occur. Why not? I thought the government is protecting us. Why are they not penalized? What is the government doing? Oh, that's right. The government's trying to figure out how to give more welfare to single mothers and Muslim immigrants. The government can't be bothered with this. This is just white men dying. Fuck them. Right? The government is busy killing Muslims in foreign countries with missiles launched from flying robots, while at the same time giving welfare to Muslims who come over here and blow us up. Oh, God damn it. It all makes sense now. Still, the subcontractors are rarely significantly penalized when deaths do occur, and with no substantial reduction in the rate of death, we have to assume that until regulators clamp down, because that's going to happen, or the rate of expansion slows, the loss of lives will persist. See, until the government does something, they're just going to keep dying. Because, well, if the government doesn't do anything, nobody else can do anything, right? We need to integrate this risk, this loss, into our view of how technology works. We might not have developed wireless radio communications without Marconi, cell phones without Bell Labs, a standardized network without EU advocates, and we wouldn't get reception without the sacrifice of workers like Joel Metz. Our iPhones wouldn't have a network to run on without all of the above. The forces combined have propelled a vast expansion of smartphones. There were 3.5 million smartphone subscribers in the U.S. in 2015 and 198 million in 2016. That's the gravitational power of the iPhone in action. It reaches back into the networks of the past and ripples out to drive and build the towers of the future. Woo. All right, then in my notes here, I have some stuff to talk about that doesn't involve reading. I just scribbled down security, which means I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to talk about security. Now, I did just do the podcast where we talked about the city of Atlanta getting infected with ransomware. And, of course, there's security. We talked about it was in episode 2 of this series where the guy found out that even though the battery on his iPhone was dead, the iPhone was still tracking him. So there's the security of you being secure, and I pointed out that if you have a cell phone and you're going to go do something illegal, don't take your fucking cell phone with you because the GPS in it could be used to track you back to being in the place where the illegal thing happened when it happened. So I know it's really tough, but if you're going to do stupid shit, leave your cell phone at home. He goes on to talk about the security of the iPhone. How secure is the iPhone? The iOS devices are the single most secure consumable device available, according to Guido, It's actually this person's name, Guido. Who the hell is Guido? I'm jumping in the middle of it. Dan Guido. Who is Dan Guido? If I don't figure it out in a couple of seconds, I'm just going to move on. Anyway, Dan Guido, he knows about this stuff. Quote, they are built like a tank from a security perspective. It is light years ahead of every other trusted device that exists on the market. It has really been designed well by people who know what's going on to keep and hold your secrets in a way that even the most well-resourced adversary can't get access, unquote. But it's still not perfect. iPhones have nonetheless been subject to a number of high-profile hacks. Charlie Miller famously managed to get the App Store to approve a malware app that allowed him to break Apple's stranglehold on the device. For $500, University of Michigan professor Anil Jain, A-N-I-L, first name, second name is J-A-I-N, was able to build a device that fooled the iPhone's fingerprint sensors. In 2015, the security firm Zerodium paid a bounty of $1 million for a chain of zero-day exploits. Zero-day exploits are vulnerabilities that the vendor is not aware of. On the iPhone, though no one knows who won the money, and no one, save Zerodium, knows what became of the 0 days. And in 2016, Toronto Citizen Lab revealed that a very sophisticated form of malware called Trident had been used to try to infect a civil rights activist phone in the UAE. The hack was revealed to have been the work of an Israeli company, the Jews, probably using money that taxpayers sent to them through our government. Revealed to have been the work of an Israeli company, which was believed to have sold its spyware for as much as $500,000, likely to authoritarian regimes in the UAE government. UAE, of course, being the United Arab Emirates. So yes, your iPhone is pretty secure, but it's still not completely secure. And remember, it's still tracking you. And yes. What are we going for? All right, next thing I got on my list, without anything to particularly read, is the Chinese factories. So what Brian does in this book, well, he didn't do it in the book, he did it in real life. He wrote about it in the book. Chapter 12 on page 263. He went to the factory where the iPhone is built. And apparently this factory is like bigger than just a factory. The factory is literally a fucking city. Walls around it and all this other shit. And he had a contact inside of the factory, like a mid-level manager person. And he thought that he and his handler slash translator were going to be able to get into the factory. But security would not let him in, despite this middle management person trying to get him in. So he's like, shit, we failed. So they're getting ready to leave. They're getting ready to give up. And an opportunity arises. Once again, see, we go back to work doing more with less. So he had all these resources, right? He had all this management person lined up, and he had it planned all ahead. It's like he had all this going on. He thought he was going to get into the factory. And he didn't. And then he's got nothing. It's like, shit, there's no way we can get in. And then an idea hits him, and they got into the factory. Totally fucking past the, illegally. Quote unquote, illegally. They snuck into they infiltrated the factory like spies. And that Tom Cruise, the Mission Impossible music was playing. They had the little fucking eyeglasses with the cameras on them. And the fucking little spider cord dropped him in and shit. Now, and actually, no. I'm not going to tell you how it happened, because you should read the book, because it's pretty fucking brilliant. They infiltrated the factory, and they went in, and he writes about it, and they wandered around for hours, just waiting to get caught by security. And it was so big, they never found, I mean, it's huge, apparently. They never actually found the place where the iPhone is made. They never managed to see an iPhone on the assembly line being put together. That's how fucking big this goddamn factory is. And there's a couple of pictures in here because he took a couple of pictures on his iPhone. And yeah, it looks like a Stalinist city, which is not much of a surprise. Where's that fucking picture? I was trying to find it. Yeah, there it is, man. That is some ugly architecture. It's an apartment complex that the workers live in. That probably somebody jumped off the top of to kill themselves. And yeah, so it's absolutely fascinating. You should read it. Where are we going next with this show? 355. And then they finally got out before they got busted. Yeah, they didn't get busted. They managed to sneak back out. Everything went down just the way it should. It's fucking awesome. Where are we at? All right, we're talking about designing the case. And they had a particular case design going on. Seemed like all the solutions that added comfort just detracted from the overall design. Eventually, Jobs decided to kill it. Quote, "I didn't sleep last night," he said, "because I realized that I just didn't love it." He said he felt that the design didn't defer enough to the screen, that it was too masculine. See, the original design, well, one of the original designs for the iPhone was too masculine. Because, of course, we don't want the phone to be masculine. Because, I mean, again, Steve knew what he was doing. Steve Jobs knew what he was doing when he was fucking people over and taking credit for their inventions. He was designing something that was going to appeal, as it does, predominantly to women and, of course, feminized men. And you don't want it to be too masculine because he understood that while women whine and cry and snivel and piss and moan about how oppressed they are, women also spend shit tons of money. And if you can sell something to women, be it cell phones, be it lies, be it pussy hats, you're going to make a fortune. I'm always right.